Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, are you okay? You look a little pale.
I have a fever, Jim, and the only prescription is more theremin.
Okay, Patrick, we're going to do something special for this particular episode of New Music. Normally, at this time, we're taking a look back at the previous month of New Music, but we're going to do something special today and look at or focus on a particular album that is coming out today.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out today, October 9th. And why are we doing this? Well, because an old buddy of ours plays on this record, and you're not going to believe this when we explain it. So when we hear the story. So this show is called Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And patched in from down in Florida is Jeff Nolan. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Patrick. Thanks for having me back.
So before we get into this record, I love, you know, one of the cool things that we've been doing this remote recording is we get to see people on Zoom in their space and everything. And people always like to see you, Patrick, with the wall of records behind you and all
my
of that.
My life's work.
Right? Yep. And with Jeff, we get to see the wall of guitars.
I know.
So that's really
so
something.
Badass, so badass, man.
Is that like your home studio?
Yeah. It's sort of the home office and studio. It used to just be the home studio before the Rona. And now it's the home office and a studio. So when I do Zoom calls, Zoom meetings and stuff, I get it a lot because I really don't have a wall to point the camera at in this room that's not got equipment and predominantly guitars hanging on the wall. I had one honcho at a company I work with give me a little grief about it and just say, "You're distracting everybody." Like, what do you want me to do? It's the room.
You know? I was going to say, I've pinned your video since we got on. I'm not looking at anyone else.
Now, are any of the guitars, you know, maybe borrowed from Hard Rock or anything like that? Or, yeah?
No, nothing borrowed from Hard Rock.
Okay.
I've been lucky over the years, you know, as a music historian that's worked with that company for so long, to be able to play so many historic guitars that I never thought I'd see in my life, let alone actually put my hands on and plug in. And, you know, so that's obviously been an incredible privilege. But no, my personal stuff is really, I pretty much have for a reason. I consider it a, you know, a toolkit more than a collection, though that is absolutely deluding myself.
It's funny you say that, because just a couple of weeks ago, we were talking with a friend of ours, Terry Banks, who plays in a band here in DC called Dot Dash, and he was basically saying, like, he just buys guitars based on how they look.
Yeah.
You know, so kind of the opposite, I think, of what you're saying. So
he had kind of that teardrop shaped Vox guitar, Jeff, which is a really cool guitar. But
You know, we with Hard Rock, particularly in 2011, when I took a traveling museum of memorabilia all around the United States, we had with us, we had Brian Jones's actual Vox Phantom,
that's where it all came from.
And that's an incredible guitar. And what's really cool about it, when you get up close and personal, it's very, very primitive. It's clearly hand built by, you know, in the Vox room. There wasn't really a factory for putting out. I don't think by that point they were still working out of England.
Yeah.
They later moved their production to Italy for
guitars. In someone's basement. Yeah, for a while there.
And it's really like a home project. It's got a Fender Stratocaster bridge from the 50s, just like kind of ham-fistedly hammered into the body, and all of these things are very charming, and it's great. It's a cool guitar.
Exactly right. And I'll tell you, folks, that's just some of the stuff that happens on our Friday night hootenanny end. So go to suburbspod.com, sign up for our Friday newsletter, and you can get the update of when the hootenanny is going to happen. And I'll just want to say one quick thing, and I'm very interested to dive into this topic, but I just want to say, Jim, you know, he gave us probably our first big break when we started doing podcasting together way back yep. when, and, that was a great night and a great opportunity for us to kind of say, wow, maybe we could actually do this. And so I definitely want to thank, you, Jeff, for that. And I'm also really interested to hear this story. I've been waiting yeah. for many days. So if you could tell us the yeah. story that involves
Blue Oyster Cult.
Right.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there.
Okay.
How would you, what specifically would you like to know?
Well, so I teased a little bit about, we're talking about a record that is being released today. So that album is Blue Oyster Cult's The Symbol Remains. And I noticed, I don't know, what was it, Jeff, 2-3 weeks ago or so, you posted something on Facebook saying, like, you've been dying to get this news out, but you had to wait until you were yeah. allowed to or whatever. And it's that you play on this album.
I
so
do.
How did this come about?
And
what do you play? It's so crazy.
I'll tell you Blue Oyster Cult, The Symbol Remains, October 9th, which I believe is today.
Today.
If this goes
mm-hmm.
to plan.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at a band that's been around as long as Blue Oyster Cult, and there's never a complacency to what they're doing. Those guys can go out and play Don't Fear the Reaper and Godzilla and Cities on Flame with rock and roll every night for the rest of their lives, and they're going to draw a crowd, and they're going to make money, and they're going to have a viable thing happening. And I will go every time because I love those songs. But they've never been a band that were into that. They've always pushed forward. They've always wanted to document what they're doing now. They've always wanted to write. So they've gone into The Symbol Remains on Frontier Records, and they have a song on there called Fight, which Buck Dharma had written quite a while ago, actually. Really, really completist Blue Oyster Cult fans over the past few years may have heard a demo of this that he's done. So it's on the album. It's actually the closing song of the album. And Buck calls me up and says, hey, Jeff, you want to play the theremin on Fight?
Because of course Buck Dharma has your number in his phone.
Well, that's another story. So I I told him, I was like, yeah, sure. And you know, we tracked it. I did it here in the studio at my house. And I used my Moog Etherwave theremin, the classic. I gave him, like, I don't know, probably 10 passes at it for different little looks and noises and stuff. And he liked it enough to use it. I was a little nervous because I knew Tom Lord-Alge was mixing the record. And I thought, man, Tom's going to hear this stuff. Legendary mixer like him. He's going to go, what the hell is this? What is this? The Day the Earth Stood Still. But no, I mean, it really slid in really nicely. And this was months ago I did this, and I'm just gobsmacked about it still. This is one of my personal favorite bands of all time.
Wow. Right here with you, man. Yep.
To actually make this extremely small contribution. I don't want to glorify what I did, guys. I made a bunch of spaceship noises with a theremin, all right? It's not like I went in there and emoted with the instrument and, you know, oh, you can really hear the Jeff Nolan touch on there. No.
There's no touch at all.
You know, it's well played, sir. Well played. It's you know, just spaceship noises and, you know, sort of classic 50s sci-fi sort of things. And it just worked for them, you know?
At the risk of making this an hour and a half podcast, I want to ask briefly, Jeff, have you done other studio work? And, you know, let us because I was not aware. Yeah, and it,
give us you, this background.
Yeah, yeah, just like.
Well, I mean, I've done tons of studio work, not just not with a theremin.
But mostly on guitar for like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Records
yeah.
we know, Achy Breaky Heart.
The yeah yeah I actually I was I sang lead on that and I never got credit. I came up in the late 80s through the punk scene, and we've probably been at the same shows the 9:30 in the late 80s and just obviously didn't realize it. Yeah, probably. You know, one of my dumb bands was probably opening for somebody you went to see. And then I was in a band in the very early 90s called I Love You that was on Geffen. And we actually did really well, relatively speaking. You know, and it just started this ball rolling. And for quite a while, I was Scott Weiland's guitar player.
Huh.
And I did his solo album, 12 Bar Blues. I actually have a song on there. I wrote the song Mockingbird Girl with him, which is on that record. Okay. And we wrote that song actually for the Tank Girl soundtrack.
Yes. and it was, I remember this.
The Tank Girl soundtrack, when they premiered the movie, the whole band went. And it was at the Man's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And it was like a full-blown Hollywood premiere. I'd never been to anything like this. And, you know, big Hollywood premiere, we're all just, you know, knuckleheads in a rock band. Amazing. And one of the actresses in the film sits right next to me. And, you know, I didn't think anything about it. It was some unknown actress. Turns out, you know, later I realized, oh, man, it was Naomi Watts.
What?
Yeah.
And Wasn't she in Mulholland Drive?
I realized that. No joke, man. It was probably 8 years later. It hit me. It's like, oh, wait. She played Jet in Tank Girl, and she sat right next to me at the premiere.
That's hilarious.
That's amazing.
I had absolutely no interaction with her other than, you know, pushing her, her elbow off my armrest. Like, come on. But we did that, and then... you know, I played on a Screamin' Trees record. I believe their last album is called Dust. Van Connor, the bass player for the Screaming Trees, has the best impression of Sasquatch in the history of impressions. He's got the gait and that looking back, that famous piece of footage. Yeah. Like he does it and you just collapse in laughter. It's so brilliant. I mean, they were a great band. I just did a little knocked around with them. That was a fun project because Ben Montench and Mike McCready played with me on that.
Oh,
and,
wow.
At one point, we were at some studio in L.A., and me and Mike were playing, and Ben Mont shows up with two Mellotrons.
Huh.
And he put them, like, facing each other, and he played them, like, he's like, holy moly, it's Ben Mont. He's playing Mellotron. Don't screw up.
He was by Mellotroning.
Yeah, yeah, it was coming at you in stereo.
I guess it was like you were known for all this great stuff you had done, and then you sort of got Buck Darman to put your number in his phone, or like...
Yeah, well, about...
Why did he call you, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, with the Blue Oyster Cult thing and Buck, about, geez, it's got to be 10, 12 years ago now. Wow. I met Buck Dharma through my friend Bob Duncan. Yeah, Bob Duncan was a writer for Cream Magazine back in the 70s, and he owns an advertising agency in San Francisco. Now, Bob is one of the coolest, most interesting people I've ever known in my life. Just, he's the best. Well, he's known the Blue Oyster Cult guys since they were all in, like, high school or something. And they, matter of fact, I think Bob was the best man at Buck Dharma and his wife Sandy at their wedding. I may be wrong about that, but something like that. So Blue Oyster Cult comes through town. Bob happens to be here with me. And so I meet the guys, and, you know, I wind up having dinner with I hooked up this thing where I had Buck and his wife come down to the Hard Rock Memorabilia Warehouse.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, just check out some guitars. And it's just one of those things, man. We just hit it off. It just, you know, aside from rock and roll and, oh, it's Buck Dharma and, oh, you know, we just hit it off. It was very cool. And we wound up having, my wife and I went and had dinner with him and the lovely Sandy Roser, Buck's wife of many, many, many years. You know, we all just connected, and we wound up staying in touch, getting close as, you know, just personal friends. And whenever I would go to a Blue Oyster Cult gig and then, you know, Buck and I would just kick it around, nerding out about guitars and effects. Yep, we would hang out at the NAMM show a lot every time it would come through Anaheim, you know. He was always a fun guy to walk through NAMM with because he was, at least at the time, I'm sure he still is, really enthusiastic about guitar effect pedal builders, like the little boutique guys, not the big manufacturers. And so, absolutely, he was super into it. So he liked to go check those people out and sort of give them a Buck Dharma visit.
Yeah.
Which for some of these cats, all of them, would be a very big deal. And right. So it was cool, man. We just became friends, and we just kind of, you know, have a couple drinks, party, and hang out, you know. And one of my jokes, or a little just sort of dorky joke between he and I, was, you know, I'd just be talking to him, and he's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, they'll, you know, the BOC's playing at the Mohegan Sun Casino tonight." And I would say, "Oh, really? What time do I load in my theremin?" And that was literally a joke between us. Oh,
that's okay, pretty good. Okay, this is good.
And he'd go, "Well, you know," and we'd have some banter, you know, about that. And so it goes on and on and on. And we did this thing in Mexico together. They were playing this sort of like classic rock sort of pseudo festival at a resort in Mexico, and Aaron, my wife, and I went, and it was just a blast. But Buck and Sandy and Aaron and I, we stayed a few days extra, and we just kind of did a couple's vacation sort of thing for a few days at this all-inclusive place. We had a blast. And
I want to go there with Buck Dharma.
So
it's all inclusive.
and as they go into the whole process, he's just a friend of mine, and it's I am a huge fan of the band as well. So that I have been enthusiastically awaiting, you know, the new music, because I really respect them for this. I have never met like an old school classic rocker who is more comfortable in his skin and in his place with his place in the world than Buck and Eric Bloom as well. You know, you get some of these guys are kind of bitter and jaded, and it's like, "Oh, well, in 1978 we were playing stadiums, and now we're playing houses of blues and casinos." You just don't, you just really get a sense from Buck and Eric, they just love to play. And yeah, they you still get the sense that they feel like they're blessed to be able to continue to do this. Like, genuinely, it's not just some sort of facade. And I love that so much. And they're all, like I was mentioned earlier, they're always making new music. And they've had this particular lineup of the band with Richie Castellano and Danny Fields, Jules Randino, for a very, very, very long time. So it was definitely time for them to document this band as a true iteration of Blue Oyster Cult, especially with Richie. I mean, that guy is a big contributor to the group. And it's that holy moly, is that kid talented? And that's where I think they wound up here with the Symbol Remains, was really making this statement of this, you know, iteration. You know, you can't have a statement like that without a robust theremin presence.
So how did it go from you joking about bringing your theremin to shows to you actually playing the theremin on a record? Like, I assume at some point you learned how to play the theremin.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I can play the theremin. It's okay. Well, I guess play the theremin is maybe a bit of a stretch.
I don't know. I've seen people play it. I don't understand. I mean, there's got to be some special technique.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's, you know, my line about the theremin for the longest time has been, it's the easiest instrument in the world to play, but it's the hardest instrument in the world to play well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like anyone could make a sound.
Yeah. Oh, right? Absolutely. Right.
But to actually like make it sound like something you'd want to hear is probably difficult, right?
Yeah. I mean, it really depends what you're going for. I mean, the true virtuosos of the instrument, like Clara Rockmore back in the day, and Caroline Ike, Pamelia Kirsten. You know, these people, where they play it like a string instrument in an orchestra, that is dramatically beyond my skills. I mean, not even in the same universe as where I'm coming from. Like so many people who get into messing around with the theremin, is really 50s sci-fi movies. You know, totally. And that kind of approach, and I'm pretty good at that. I know how to mess with it pretty well.
Do you think it's like feedback in a way, Jeff? I mean, sometimes when I think about theremin contribution, I think like, wow, that sounds like somebody who really knows how to use feedback. But you know,
I can see that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, kind of, but maybe not. I don't know. Do you think it's relatable?
It's controlling electronic.
Yeah, just that pulse and that that tone and that pitch. Yeah, if it's really loud. But I don't know. Did that factor in at all to you, Jeff, being a guitar player, obviously?
You know, I the theremin for me, I never really thought about that, Patrick. And and now that you mention it, I actually – that kind of touches on the way that I approach that thing for sure. Because a lot of times with my trio – I would have the theremin set up on stage and I would play it with the headstock of my guitar and sort of lean into it, you know, to get some effects during like instrumental breaks and solos and stuff. So it, much similar to, you know, if you're leaning into an amp to get some crazy feedback.
To get the real nasty feedback,
Now, when I do that, I just have to drown the theremin in echo. Because, you know, there is no precision when you're just kind of leaning.
Exactly, you know?
I mean, obviously, it's amazing that Buck Dharma asked me to make some, you know, this little bit of noise on the Bluish Cult record. And like I say, I don't want to overstate my my contribution. It's a blink and you miss it. It's ear candy. It's a piece of texture. I was teasing him and said, hey, let's be honest here. I'm the only guy you know who owns a theremin, correct? But I mean, to be fair, you know, these guys are not going to put something on their record out of whimsy so much. No, you know,
of course not.
So it's cool, man. I can't believe it. Well, you know, all these years of my life since like the Nixon administration, perfecting my guitar technique and really getting down on the guitar and thinking, hey, I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah.
And I wind up on this like iconic band's album playing the damn theremin. Go figure.
He was best known for that theremin solo.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the 11 albums he did as a guitarist and songwriter and all that. And you know him now. The other joke I keep laying out, Buck, is in 20 years there's going to be a Saturday Night Live sketch that's more theremin.
That's right. Of course. Yes. How do they feel about that sketch?
I mean, how could they not love it? I mean, in itself has become this legendary piece of comedy, and yes, it's centered on Buck's song and the, you know, this performance. They have embraced it. I mean, I'm sure it gets old for them personally. You know, everything, more cowbell this, more cowbell that. But they would have been silly not to embrace it. Well, and think about what that cowbell sketch did for just awareness of that song. I mean, first of all, that song never went away in the first place. It's not like that was some forgotten song. There's never been a time that wasn't a standby, a mainstay of classic rock radio. Because it's just a brilliant piece of work. Undeniably, objectively, brilliantly done.
Amazing pop, perfect pop song, right?
It is so good and so evocative and atmospheric and
amazing.
You know,
and
for being
it's
such
not even their best song.
No, God, it's
not even by a long shot.
But you know, it also underlines, I think, obviously the guy's a just genius guitar player, but Buck Dharma is an amazing vocalist. Just this kind of smooth, really like it his vocal counterpoints the darkness of some of Blue Oyster Cult's music so well. I think he doesn't get enough credit as a singer because he's really incredible.
Well, and you know, that's one of the genius things about Blue Oyster Cult. Not only did they blend three guitar players, but they blended vocals so well that you weren't quite sure. It wasn't like Kiss where you knew it was Paul Stanley or Gene Simmons. I mean,
yeah. Well, everybody sang too in Blue Oyster Cult. Everybody sang lead. I mean, it was mostly Eric and Buck. You know, obviously Eric is kind of the de facto lead singer. But I love that on The Symbol Remains, they kind of kept that tradition up. And Richie Castellanos sings at least two songs. I know that.
How would you characterize the whole record, Jeff? The new one. Oh, okay. Yep.
It's not disjointed. It just like they really did. If it sounds to me, I'm not going to speak for the band.
I'm just looking for your impression. Of course,
it sounds to me like they made a conscious decision not to put parameters on what their writing had to be for the album. You know, it shows. It's almost like a tour through the way the band has been historically. Like the song that I play on, when I first heard it, I thought, and I heard it quite a while ago, but I thought this sounds like a song that could have been on Spectres, you know? And there's a couple, more than a couple, really bangers on this record too, some heavy ones. And I'll tell you, Eric Bloom sounds incredible on this record. He may kind of steal the record. I gotta
say. Oh wow, I'm excited now.
He is kicking out the jams on this one. So They got that first single they cut loose was That Was Me, and that song's just objectively rocking, man. It's killer. I was so stoked to hear it.
Well, I'm excited as hell, and I also got to admit to everyone, and also to you, Jeff, I've missed the last 20 years of Blue Oyster Cult. If they put out any new albums, I haven't heard them.
Well, so I mean, that's,
I need to catch up.
And yeah, I mean, it's, well, a good place to start is today with The Symbol Remains, right?
There you go.
Well,
there you go.
I'll tell you another thing that I find just like crazy kismet. October of 2020 marks the 100th anniversary of the invention of the theremin.
No.
Oh, wow.
It's true.
Really?
There you go.
Yep, 1900. Yep. Who invented that?
Leon Theremin.
Was he Italian?
Russian.
Really? Russian? Mm. Hmm.
And, yeah, in October of 1920. It all comes full circle, guys.
There you go. All right, so here's my last question. So speaking of the past, here's what I want to ask you, Jeff. What does 16-year-old Jeff Nolan think of current-day Jeff Nolan?
He thinks he's fat and gray. I think if 16-year-old Jeff Nolan would find this current iteration somewhat bourgeois.
But I'm saying you're getting to play, you know, you got to play with your heroes. You know,
no, I mean, obviously it's right? My teenage self is really just freaking out when I hold a physical copy of this album and see, you know, my name and little writing on it.
Yes.
You know,
amazing.
Little
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's like to have put just a grain of a pebble into that garden is amazing to me.
Yeah,
right. That's amazing.
All right, Jeff Nolan, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon. Absolutely.
This always a great. Pleasure, my friends. Always
this
a pleasure.
This is great. So if anybody would like to comment on Blue Oyster Cult, we'd love to hear that. So please
absolutely.
Please call us. Leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Back on the old show when we had Jeff on and we did the live event at the Hard Rock Cafe, he was the one who did like the little Cheers intro. Remember we did like a Cheers?
Yes.
Thing. I can't remember how it went exactly, but he did that. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the song. So you're going to hear the song now. You're going to hear the theremin, all that. And go check out the new Blue Oyster Cult album. For sure.
EOC,
go buy
baby.
It, peoples. Yep. All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Jeff Nolan.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers, guys. You're the best.
Of a fight, it wasn't anybody's night, it wasn't that much of a fight, that's right, no one heard the bell, there's no story to tell, no one reached into his boot for a stiletto knife, nobody wasn't that much of a fight. It wasn't that much of a fight. Nobody went to the light. It wasn't that much of a fight. That's right. No charge in the smoking. No bottles broken. Nobody running to the glove box for the stolen gun. No dirty deeds done. Just wasn't that fun. It
I never got laid because I played the theremin.
Yeah, I think that you could really verify or debunk that quickly because there's only about 8 people that do this.
That's right.